So when a restaurant begins to struggle, right, there's this decision, right? Number one, how can we tell whether it's just stagnating and we can sort of breathe new life into it and bring it back to its former glory? Or how do we know whether it's just the beginning of the end, meaning that this thing needs to die so that we can give birth to something new? And I know we don't like to talk about the end. The end is a loaded conversation, and I know it's very emotional. But understanding the difference between when a restaurant is just in decline and can be brought back to life and when a restaurant is in decline and it's the beginning of the end and it needs to die so that we can give birth to something new, this is an incredibly important conversation. And like I said, we don't talk about it a lot. But in order to have this conversation, I'm joined by one of the P3 Mastermind coaches. It's a guy named Chris Hughes. He is a friend, a colleague, a mentor of mine for the last, 17, 18 years. He helps dozens of restaurants in the P3 Mastermind, and he's done this dozens of times over the course of his, 25 years in the industry. He steps in and he brings things back to life, and he steps in and sometimes gives rebirth to something, closes one concept and helps it reemerge as something new. So this is a conversation he wanted to have, and I'm just thrilled to be able to facilitate that conversation. All of that on today's episode of Restaurant Strategy.
There's an old saying that goes something like this: you'll only find three kinds of people in the world: those who see, those who will never see, and those who can see when shown. This is Restaurant Strategy, a podcast with answers for anyone who's looking.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. My name is Chip Close. This is the Restaurant Strategy Podcast. We do two episodes every single week. We are cruising toward our 500th episode. All kinds of great stuff in store over the coming months. I appreciate you being here. Listen, I got this podcast. You know that. You can find me on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok. You can read my book, The Restaurant Marketing Mindset. You can find me on stages all over the country at conventions, at trade shows, at conferences. I also run a coaching program. It's a mastermind format. It's called the P3 Mastermind. Currently, I work with over 150 restaurant owners from all over the country, all specifically geared towards increasing the profitability of your businesses. If you are stuck in single-digit profits, then reach out, get in touch. I can show you how to generate consistent, predictable 20% returns. RestaurantStrategyPodcast.com/schedule. Grab some time in the calendar. It's a 30-minute call. It's totally free. I promise you there is no pressure. You'll get to know more about me and the program I run. I'll get to know more about you and the restaurant that you run, and let's see if you're a good fit. RestaurantStrategyPodcast.com/schedule. As always, that link is in the show notes. So today I am joined by a guy named Chris Hughes. Chris and I have worked together numerous occasions over the course of the last, 18, 19 years. He is a coach with me, restaurant coach, as part of the P3 Mastermind. Today I wanted to have a conversation about failing restaurants and actually how you stop the bleeding, how you turn it around. It's something he's got a lot of experience and success with. In order to do that first, though, let's welcome to the show Chris. How are you? Who are you? Give everybody a quick little background so they know why they should be listening to you.
Hey, Chip. Thanks again for having me. It's great to be back on. It's been, I think, 2 or 3 years since I was here the first time.
Yeah, we did. We had you on early on.
Yeah, so it's great to be back. As Chip had mentioned, I'm part of the Restaurant Strategy crew. About 25 years of experience in the industry. I've done everything from soup to nuts, worked my way up from busboy, have been a floor manager, waiter, a sommelier, beverage director, GM, director of operations, consultant. Have done the time, so to speak, but feel like I have a good perspective on the industry, and certainly share. We have some shared experiences working together. I have some unique experiences on my own, and really love working with people to try to improve their process, procedures, and operations in their own restaurant. So,
yep, I love it. I think this is going to be a good conversation. I spend a lot of time, right? So
I founded the P3 Mastermind. So Chris is one of the fellow coaches who helps, works with the Mastermind members. Nobody reaches out to a restaurant coach when things are going great. They're reaching out when things are not going great. So we wanted to have this conversation about, like, you know, how can you tell if a restaurant's just hasn't hit its stride yet? Or how can you tell if they're just hitting a rough patch? Or if it's more than a rough patch and it's really becoming, you know, a downward spiral, if it's really a leveling off of revenue, of all of that. So I'll start there. Like, how do you, like, what are the signs, in your opinion, for when a restaurant is going beyond rough patch into something more?
Yeah. I think that the thing that usually strikes me is that restaurants are not linear in their business. They're not linear on their way up. Some are, you know, some can be, like when I opened Lilia, it was 5 days in and then just went straight up. That's not the norm, but it's normally a gradual building. And then there's some, you know, fallback after the initial excitement is worn off and you kind of consolidate and then you continue your march up as you're gaining enthusiastic regulars, et cetera. And as that word of mouth works. The downward slope is similar. You don't just go from I'm a viable restaurant to I'm a failing restaurant overnight. You know, they say it's a death by 1,000 cuts. It's death by 10,000 poor choices and 10,000 bad nights, maybe. But it's a very slow process. And then it speeds up, you know. You know, it's kind of like the old adage, like, I didn't go broke, I didn't go broke all at once. It took a while and then it happened immediately, you know.
yeah.
So, you know, the restaurant will start to exhibit signs of unhealth. And, you know, for me, that's like, you know, cover counts start to like soften a little bit. You know, at first you're like, well, we always did 100. Now we're doing 97, 99, you know, it's close enough. You know, there's a lot of close enough in that first signs of like poor restaurant health. It could also be, you know, whether it's cover count or per head guest average, you know, the per head can drop a little bit. And, you know, I think on the outside, people would say, well, that's not the sign. How does that signal a restaurant in poor health? To me, that ties in with service and the quality of the servers. And so if you've got a per head that starts to drop, it's probably tied to underperforming servers, which is a symptom of a restaurant that's going to start failing because the performance of your staff is subpar. So, you know, it takes a while for that to trickle through.
That comes down to, for me, leadership, right? Like, so, and you said a second ago, you said it was, 1,000 bad decisions or 10,000 bad decisions. So, I'm always reminded of this this thing of like when people would say to me, I just have such bad staff, you know, and the executive consultant would come in and say, well, it begs the question, why did you hire such bad staff, you know, or why didn't you train them to be better, or why have you kept this bad staff? You know, there are three opportunities that had nothing to do with the bad staff, had everything to do with you. You chose to bring them on, you didn't train them properly, and you chose to keep them on. So for me, that's sort of like a lot of these decisions go back to poor leadership. And that's what I do as a leadership coach, right? So I work with restaurant owners. You now work with restaurant owners. And I always like them to see their responsibility here. Because if you can own the problem, you get to own the solution. It's very empowering. You say, so when people say, oh, I've got bad staff, it's like, what begs the question? Those three things. And there's so many of those over and over and over. Like, oh, this food's, you know, these items in the menu are just not profitable. It's like, well, why did you put them on in the first place? Or why did you keep them on? Or why haven't you chosen to fix that? Certainly, we've had similar conversations with P3 members over the last few weeks. Talk to me about the other. I mean, do you see it that way? I mean, do you see it that way as well?
Oh, yeah. No, there's the responsibility lies at the top at the end of the day. And, you know, you think of, of all the decisions that you have to make, you know, it's I kind of liken it to someone who's designing and building their own home. Like, it's the sum of all those parts that make a home a really beautiful thing or a total architectural monstrosity. And it's up to you to make them cohesive and to make them make sense.
Yep.
And there's so many options that come at you as an owner or as an operator that it's easy to either, like, not making a choice is making a choice. So either you're making them consciously or you're making them subconsciously, but you're making choices.
Yep.
And all of those combine to that end consumer product that consumers are either going to accept or reject.
So when you step in, or in the past when you have stepped in, and I don't spend a lot of time doing this, but I'm really curious to know you. Yeah. I spend much less time trying to figure out, like, how did we get here from there? Right. So because people come in and say, like, I don't understand. We used to do $200,000, you know, every single month. And, you know, now we hardly break 120. And I just don't know what we're supposed to do. I don't spend time trying to figure out what happened. I usually try to go in and just, like, stop the bleeding right there at the 120 mark. But that's how I approach it. Do you approach it any differently?
I mean, I do a little bit of a postmortem. I'm like, I kind of need to understand, like, well, what were you when you opened? That's the one idea, because there's always that vision of, like, this is who we're going to be. And then 6 to 12 months later, the customers have told you who they want you to be. And you've either made some adjustments or B, have failed because you ignored your customers. And so, because it kind of is it's useful to understand why the acceptance isn't there. Like, why are people not coming to this restaurant? Is it because you have ignored them and they wanted you to be X and you decided to be Y? Like, because that's something that's different than it's, you know, is it conceptually based or is it performance based? You know, if it's conceptually based and your concept, you're performing on all levels, but people just don't like your concept, it's really hard to move forward from that point.
Yeah, people just don't want the thing that you brought them, right?
Right. Like, and maybe the conversation is, how do we get this thing to float? Maybe it's, how do we put this thing out of its misery and move you into a concept that people want? If it's performance-based, that's really where, you know, I think though that's actionable in a way that you can affect some change. Now, it's not easy, you know. It's always easier to have a restaurant perform well from the beginning and not have to retool, than to have to, like, take a step back, rebuild, retool, retrain. But, you know, if that's where you're at, that's where you're at. So, you know, there's no getting around it.
So it's funny. I talk about this a lot. Yeah, I talk about this a lot, where I say, you know, there are restaurants that struggle and restaurants that fail. And I don't think restaurants struggle and fail. And I demark them this way. And I say, failure has to do with product market fit. It's like what you're saying here. I created something for people and that just turns out it's not what they want. So either I didn't do proper homework ahead of time, or I didn't listen, or I was totally wrong. I did my homework and I thought this is what they wanted and it's just not delivering and all that. But that's why restaurants fail. And I think that happens pretty quickly, right? Like, that happens a year or two in. It's hard to sustain it further. And then I think restaurants struggle when they do serve an audience and they are beloved and they're doing a lot of revenue, but they're just not doing it profitably because they don't have the systems in place to manage COGS, manage late, right? To manage prime cost. And I think important to understand, is this restaurant failing or is this restaurant struggling? And that tells me, and I've used that for the last several years, say the last 7 years, that tells me, like, which direction we move. Are we going to go, because if we have to look at the brand and the product market fit and what this neighborhood needs and the price point, like, that's a rebrand. We got to put it out of its misery and reconceptualize. Or is this thing doing really well, which is largely who we work with in the P3 Mastermind. That's, I always say, one I can help from 3,000 miles away, and one it's very hard to help unless you're in there full time. I think what we're really good at doing in the P3 Mastermind is find restaurants that are doing what they do really, really well, making a lot of people happy, just struggling because they need a management system to help them manage these costs and think differently about marketing and all that. And that I very much can do on a Zoom group, you know, group call once a week. Does that resonate with how you look at things?
Yeah, certainly. Like I was saying, if it's the second problem, which is operational, performance-based, those are actionable, and a lot of it can be trained, a lot of it can be taught, a lot of it can be analyzed, a lot of it can actually be quantified.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at some quantifiable problems, quantifiable results, target them, which I know you and I share that. We love to be able to goalpost things and say, hey, you're almost there. You've made it. Now you're successful because X, Y, and Z, we can see it.
Yep.
Or you're not making your numbers because of X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
So I love actionable items, and performance-based is definitely trainable, teachable, quantifiable.
Running a restaurant means juggling a lot: staffing, inventory, customer service, and finances. Sales tax has to be done, and while no one plans to miss a deadline or miscalculate a payment, mistakes happen. When those happen, they can lead to penalties, fines, and, added stress. That's why there's Davo by Avalara. Davo integrates with your point-of-sale system and automatically sets aside sales tax daily, giving you a clear view of your actual cash flow. Then, when it's time to file, Davo files and pays your sales tax on time, in full, guaranteed. No more last-minute scrambles or costly mistakes, just seamless automation. Thousands of restaurants trust Davo, and with a 4.9-star rating on G2, it's a proven solution. Your first monthly filing is free with zero commitment. Get started today at davosalestax.com/restaurantstrategy. I will add in here, this fits in perfectly with what we're about to talk about. Again, davosalestax.com/restaurantstrategy. And yes, that link is in the show notes. So in this turnaround scenario, right, like you're stepping in. We always talk about staff, right? Staff are the lifeblood of your they've got more contact with your diners than any one owner ever could. Staff morale is at an all-time low. Talk to me about how you rebuild culture. And I know you've stepped in on a couple instances over your career and fixed that. Like, how do you get buy-in again? How do you get them on board with the vision, you know, when they've grown accustomed to a different kind of environment? How have you done this in the past, or how have you seen it done successfully?
I think the if I had one takeaway word, it would be honesty. I think it really is important to not act like the emperor is wearing clothes if your restaurant is failing. And, you know, pull back the curtain, and some humility and honesty. It's part of that human-like emotion, the human connection, that when someone shows some vulnerability, and as an owner, I know that most often owners really shy away from this, but I think it's an opportunity to say, hey, I'm actually human too. We've made some mistakes. We value you. We value all of you as, you know, as members of this family at this restaurant. And these are the challenges that we face. And we're really hoping to get your input, your hard work, your abilities, your intelligence to come together to fix this. And we're going to fix it together with your help. I think that the idea of doing it behind closed doors, which is usually the first impulse from what I've seen of owners, is like everything's like hush. And the staff's like your 5-year-olds. They already know, you know, like they're literally in the locker room talking about like how you can't make, you've got purveyors you haven't paid in 60 days. Like they already know.
So
acting like it's a big secret. Start with honesty. Like that's where I.
It's funny. I've talked about this on the show. This is something I got from you, and I talk about it to the members a lot. And I have mentioned it on the show numerous times. two things you did pretty much across the board almost every day is you found a way to say, I don't know, and you found a way to say, my bad. So working side by side with you for a very long time, that it was so refreshing when you would take ownership of something, even when it really wasn't your fault. You understood the buck has to stop somewhere. And if you're the guy in the room, you have to take ownership of it. And so you say, hey, my bad. Okay, that was on me. I should have done blah, 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 blah. This is how we're going to fix it. And it was so refreshing. And I watched you just like, it lets the air out of the room. You go, oh, okay, it's the lid off the pressure cooker. And the other thing was that, you know, saying, I don't know. People come up and say, hey, table 22 is pissed because X, Y, and Z, you know, what should I do? And you'd say all the time, I don't know. What do you think we should do? And it was really interesting because you put it to me one time and you said, I'm a pretty experienced, fairly opinionated guy. Like in that moment, of course, I have an opinion. I will have an idea of like the best course of action, but it's not in the restaurant's best interest for me to just always tell people what to do. And so if I say, I don't know, what do you think we should do? And somebody says, well, I think we should do X, Y, Z. Chances are it's exactly what you would have done. You say, I think that's great. That's exactly what I would do. Go do it. X, Y, Z. If they say X, Y, Z and you say, and you don't agree with it, you say, yeah, I understand why you'd say that, but I really think we should do A, B, C instead. Go do it. Right. You get to overrule them, but you learn something and you got them to think through it, make a suggestion, and then you make another suggestion and they get to learn from that interaction. Like, oh, I didn't realize we could do ABC. Okay, that's really great. And in the amazing off chance that they really had a better idea than you, you get to take credit for it. They say, what should I do? You say, I don't know. What should... Right, you get to learn something.
And I think we should do X, Y, Z.
In your head, you're going, shit, I wouldn't have done that. Yeah. That's a really great idea. I say, great, I love that. Go do that. And you walk away amazing. Learning something. It makes you a stronger leader. Mm-hmm. All by stopping and just asking a question. I think it's really positive. So it goes back to that form of honesty. And again, it's something I learned from you. It's just those two things. Every day, I think you went out of your way to say, I don't know, am I bad? And it made such a difference for the dynamic and the sort of the culture of the place.
I think the empowerment is key too, you know, and that goes to what you're saying.
100%.
Empowering your 100%. Staff to feel like they're a part of the solution, huge.
Absolutely. Again, even if it's exactly, or especially if it's exactly what you would have said, they get to take credit for it. They get to take ownership of it. And as the owner, as the GM, or whatever you are, if you're listening to this show, you're probably in a leadership position. Like, you already have a sense of ownership. Like, you don't need to feel any more the owner. You are the owner. So better to let other people have a share in the ownership. All right, my last question here on this subject. To make it actionable, right? So if there's one piece of universal advice that you'd give to any restaurateur who feels like they are on the brink, what would that be? What's the, like, I don't know, the most critical principle, an idea, a step forward they could take, something so that they could feel like they have a chance of success?
Honestly, you have zero, I can say this with certainty, you have no chance at turning your restaurant around without the people who work for you. And it maybe that sounds obvious, maybe it doesn't. The human capital is your greatest asset. The people who work in your restaurant are the only, they're your lifeline to success, and they're your absolute guarantee of failure if you haven't invested in them. Because there's so little to the rest of your restaurant, and I don't care what concept you are, people, and I've said this, you know, during our coaching sessions, Chip, people don't go out for your food. They go out for the experience. And a big part of that, huge part of that, is the human interaction that they're craving. It's the server that they love. It's that the excitement of being out among other people and enjoying the entire part of it. And, you know, for me, it's like, The staff, and I can think of the restaurants that I've been associated with that I've either been in charge of or even been a part of the staff, the ones that were truly great, it had nothing to do with the chairs. They weren't great because they had beautiful chairs. They weren't great because the artwork was phenomenal. Was that extra stuff? Sure. But they were great because of the staff. Truly, truly, truly. Like, I can't stress that enough. The staff was more important than the food. I'll even say that. Yep. I really believe that. There's a lot of places that can cook a filet. It's not that hard. A lot of places can cook fish. It's a little harder, but it's still within the realm of most humans to do that competently.
Yeah.
But it's really rare to find a place that offers personal connection, that offers that, you know, the real warmth and genuine hospitality. And that's how you turn a restaurant around.
One of, I think, the biggest things, so again, if we can sort of bifurcate this conversation and say restaurants struggle because they don't have the systems in place to properly manage prime cost, or to, you know, what's our system for growing revenue or increasing cover counts and all of that. That's very much what we do in the P3 Mastermind. I talk about it all the time. You guys know that I run this group coaching program. There's a link in the show notes every single week. So if anyone ever feels like that's what you need help with, that's what the program was designed to do. We've got over 150 members currently in the program spread across four different groups. If you want to have a conversation, those conversations are totally free. There is never any pressure. It's really just a way for us to get to know each other and figure out if we can fix the thing that you're struggling with. So that link is in the show notes. I'll say that, right? So if restaurants are struggling, we're really good at fixing that in the thing. The other piece, which is harder, which is that a restaurant is failing, which is that the wrong product market fit, all of that. How, in your opinion, Chris, how do people go do that? Because that's not something that we do. How do you begin to fix the food, fix the concept, re-engage your neighborhood, get things back on track, fix the decor, the experience? Like, in your experience, how have you seen that happen?
It's a very slow process. And that's, I think, where that gut check, the initial gut check has to happen, in the sense of, do I have this within me financially, and do I have this within me emotionally and energy wise to do this? Because really, I always say that it takes 12 months to turn a restaurant around. If you are truly in that failing phase, it looks imminent. You need to have 12 months in you, financially and emotionally. Now, if you do have that, if the answer is yes, then it's basically, I always triage it. I set up a you know, here's my top 10 where I know these are affecting the business the most. And, you know, part of that is cost controls. We don't normally promote cost controls in the terms of the non-controllables, you know, the general and administrative. But if you're bleeding out, it's every single penny that you can save that's not guest facing is super important, because obviously, you know, we don't want to be pruning back so much from the guests that they're just like, well, there's no value here. So I tend to look at the general and administrative and the those kind of fixed costs and say, okay, well, what can I pull out of here? You know, maybe it's the floral budget. Maybe it's, you know, it's XYZ. It's the things that aren't landing on the plate. You know, looking at the labor, looking at, you know, the ways that you can save money in that regard. And then on the non-financial side, it's every guest interaction that's occurring is your opportunity to either, you know, create a new regular or to lose a regular. And it's through all of that, like, to me, the focus is on training. It's about getting more people through the pipeline. So your cover counts are dropping. You have to get more people through the pipeline. And then it's, what are you doing with them while they're here? How is the interaction? Are you training the steps of service? Are you training people to provide, you know, really great warm hospitality? Or are they just taking the order, and are they order takers? So, you know, the value for the guest has to be twofold. It's got to be on the hospitality side. It's got to be on the plate. And, you know, there's a lot of those intangibles. It doesn't cost a restaurant more money to train their staff better. It costs the same amount of money. Training is free for the most part, unless you want to pay, you know, there's third parties that offer training services and all that. But I really believe that you can offer fantastic training in-house for free. You can, there's so many resources out there. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And I think that's the other part where a restaurant will say, and I've seen this in my own, you know, career, where oh, well, we have a training program. We're in process. We're developing it. And then a year goes by and it's still not instituted. I'd rather have something than no training, you know? Yeah. And I think that's also a culprit where, you know, oh, well, we planned on doing this, but we haven't done it. And so we don't have anything right now.
Yeah, 100%. The last thing I'll say, this will be the last word on this, but when we talk about training, we talk about this, we just talked about it in the session earlier today, actually, with some people, is that how important it is to, I always say, to operationalize something. So if we say, hey, teamwork's really important to us, like make sure you know you're focusing on teamwork. That's one thing. Or I can build the bussers, I can build that figure eight and say, I want you to focus on bread, water, clearing, resetting, and then help, right? So make sure everybody has bread, everybody has water. See if there's anything you can clear, any courses that need to be cleared. See what needs to be marked for the next course or what we can reset. And then after all those things are good in your station, you go to your neighbor and you see if they need help. Then you go back, bread, water, clear, reset. And then you go ask somebody else if they need help. You go to the host, you go to the service bar, you go back to the kitchen. The 20% of their time is then spent on helping other people. And now I've got all eight of my busboys on the floor also spending 20% of their time. Then we make teamwork infectious. So I don't just say, hey, I really want, you know, teamwork's really important here. I make it part of their job. So when you do these four things, when you cycle through your figure eight, the last thing is go help a neighbor. Next time, go help another neighbor. Next time, go help another neighbor. Next time. And so 20% of their night, yeah, which is huge when you think about it. So I would say when you train people, when you think about these processes, think how you operationalize it. So, and I could give 1,000 examples of it. It's probably the most concrete one. If you want hospitality, figure out how you, just don't tell people, I want you to be warm and hospitable. Show them how to do it. To literally write them the script. If this, then that. And I think with everything you do, that's going to be huge. And I think it's where a lot of restaurants fail. It's a lot of restaurants stumble through because they're really good at telling people what they need them to do. They're not good at telling them how and why, you know, how they need to do it, when they need to do it, why it's important that they do it. Chris, I appreciate you taking time. I think it's a really good conversation. Everybody listening, appreciate you taking time out of your week to sit here and listen to this. I know there are a lot of other great shows that you could be listening to. Appreciate you making this part of your week. Again, restaurants struggle, restaurants fail. If you've got a struggling restaurant, I mean, you got a good restaurant, a lot of people love you. You're just struggling to make a meaningful amount to the bottom line. That's what the P3 Mastermind is all about. That link is in the show notes. You can also just set up a call with me, restaurantstrategypodcast.com/schedule. You'll chat with me or someone else from the team, and let's just see if you're a good fit. Again, appreciate you being here, Chris. Appreciate all you guys listening. Thank you very much.